Jeff, Oiler fans have a really positive recollection of those series, having won all six and winning the first, first 16 games before finally losing one, and then the miracle comeback. But I'm guessing on the other side of it, it's not nearly as rosy from Winnipeg's side of things.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on, first of all, guys, and we don't want to have too many Jets fans crying when they hear that intro. But yeah, it was a tough go for the Jets, certainly to start. Let's not forget, though, that the Jets do have one playoff victory over the Oilers in the last season of the WHA, when Kent Nelson and Terry Ruskowski and the WHA Jets beat Wayne Gretzky and the WHA Oilers to win the last AFCO Cup in WHA. And then after that, things went downhill pretty quickly. Obviously, the Jets were decimated in the merger, and it didn't help that they were playing. Like, for example, the Jets had a fantastic team in 84-85. That was the year that there were three of the top five teams in the whole league in the Smythe division. Yeah. Oilers, Jets, Flames. And this was the Jets' best ever team. They had six guys who scored 30 goals. It was led by Dale Hawerchuk. But unfortunately, two things happened. One, the Oilers were the greatest team of all time that year, as voted recently. And Jamie McCowan did the Oilers a favor by breaking Hawerchuk's ribs in game three of that series. And that was, I don't know how many people remember this in Edmonton, probably not many, but at the time, the Jets were the hottest team in the NHL. They had finished off their regular season with 13. They'd gone 13 games undefeated, including two wins over Edmonton at Northlands. And then they won the first two games against Calgary to start the playoffs. So they were fit. And it was a 15-game unbeaten streak, which is only a couple years after they'd had a 30-game winless streak. So they'd been quite a turnaround for Winnipeg. But breaking Hawerchuk's ribs was a deal-breaker. And so they managed to get by Calgary. But when you go up against the greatest team of all time without your leading scorer and captain, that's a pretty tough hill to climb.
Jeff, I think we got to start at the beginning there, where you talked about the merger, the WHA, and they lost some of their top players. Why did that happen? Why did they lose those players?
Well, it was technically a merger, but really it was a takeover of the NHL by the WHA, and so the Jets were, all the WHA teams were allowed to protect two skaters and two goalies. But Wayne Gretzky got an exemption somehow. I don't remember the details of that, but they always were allowed to protect two players plus Gretzky because he had a personal services contract with Peter Pocklington. So that was the rules might have been bent there slightly for Wayne Gretzky, but that's, we've heard that before. And sorry,
no bitterness, Jeff.
I didn't mean to say that. So the Jets had their 78-79 team was a fantastic team. This is the year after they lost Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nilsson and Bobby Hull, which is arguably the greatest line, one of the greatest lines of all time. But this 78-79 team had a bunch of Houston Aeros who'd come over, who'd been picked up after that team folded. So they're led by Kent Nilsson and Terry Ruskowski and Rich Preston and Willie Lindstrom, who, of course, went on to play with the Oilers for a few seasons. And Scott Campbell's on defense. They had Lars-Erik Sjöberg, who was considered by any Swedish player on the national team to be a superior defenseman to Boreas Salming. So they were a fantastic team. And they weren't favored to win the Apple Cup that year because with the merger of the Jets and the Arrows, that was two teams who hated each other's guts for the previous 4 years. So you had all these two factions who feuded for most of the season, and they kind of came together when Tom McVie got brought in as the coach. So they had a good final quarter of the season, and then picked up the speed in the playoffs and beat the Oilers 4-2.
We're discussing with the author of Broken Ribs and Popcorn. Now, why the title Broken Ribs and Popcorn, Jeff?
Well, the broken ribs refers to Jamie McCowan and Dale Hawerchuk.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. And
across the blue line, man. Oof. That was
Pardon
a tough
me?
One. I said when he came across the blue line, broke his ribs in the playoffs.
Yeah, Hawerchuk made the problem was that the Jets had hemmed the Flames in their zone for most of a shift. And when they finally got it out, the Flames turned it over again, and Hawerchuk came back with a full head of steam, and McCowan couldn't get off to the bench, so he was stuck flat-footed. And he told me, listen, what would you do? You can either start skating backwards from a dead stop and get burned by Dale Hawerchuk, or you can reach out with your stick like everyone had done in that game so far 200 times, and there had been no penalties. And unfortunately for Howardchuk and for the Jets, Howardchuk had a habit of jumping around players, and he jumped, lifted his arm, and Cowan caught him between his shoulder pads and his pants and cracked a couple ribs. And but the popcorn part is just as heartbreaking for Jets fans, because if you recall, in 1990, the Jets were up 2-1 going into Game 4, and they Dave Ellett scored in double overtime to put the Jets up 3-1. And this is the Gretzky-less Oilers, because he'd been traded a couple of seasons earlier. But it's still at there's still Messier and Curry and Ranford in goal. And so this was cause for jubilation in Winnipeg. Finally, we were going to beat the Oilers. It had been so long, and so we're going to finally put the Oilers away here. And at the time, if you remember, the 3-1 comebacks were not common. There had only been four or five of them in the history of the NHL. So there was very little consideration to that happening. Everyone just thought, well, we got to win one out of three. And so in game six back in Winnipeg, the Jets fell behind 3-0 early in the game, and Peck Twain came back to 3-3, and had all the pressure on the Oilers late in the third period in game six. And so everyone thought, okay, well, this is it. We're gonna get this final goal here and knock them off. And there was a close play at the ice is tilted and the Jets are flying. And there's a close play at the Oilers' blue line, and it gets blown down on an offside. And one slightly over-emotional fan, I'm going to guess it was a he, voiced his displeasure by throwing a box of popcorn on the ice. And so this is in the days before ice-scraping teams, so they had to find a 65-year-old caretaker and skate him out there. He didn't have skates, and he's wearing his runners, and he had a dustbin and a broom, and he had to scrape up every last kernel, and that took 5 minutes. So while that happened, Ted Green and John Mucker called the Oilers over. They got to calm down. The air came out of the building. And then a few minutes later, Yari Curry came down the right wing and scored over Bob Essens' blocker. So that was the second heartbreaker for Winnipeg. But the other thing that's remarkable about those series is that you mentioned off the top the 16-game losing streak that the Jets had. That is, like, I talked about this with Glenn Sather, and he said, you will never, ever see that again. And he said, most of our games were close, so there were a lot of 3-2 games, 4-2 games, but we got all the bounces. And the fun part for me was I got to make a connection to tennis with this story, because there was, if you guys remember, Vitas Gerulaitis and Jimmy Connors, professional tennis players back in the 80s, well, for a while there, Connors had Gerulaitis' number, and he beat him 16 times in a row. And then on the 17th match, Gerulaitis, everything came together for him, and he won. And at the post-game press conference, somebody asked Gerulaitis, so what happened out there today? What was the difference? And Gerulaitis looked at him and pointed at him and said, nobody beats Vitas Gerulaitis 17 times in a row. So it's the same thing. Nobody beats the Winnipeg Jets 17 times in a row either.
It's absolutely great. Now, you know, there's obviously, you know, I grew up in Edmonton. I grew up loving the Oilers. I didn't even think of any feelings or emotions on the other side. So was there one particular time when it was more hurtful, like where you thought this was the team and then you get into the series and it just came up short? Or was it always, oh no, here comes Gretzky and the Oilers?
Well, it wasn't so much Gretzky. If you talk to any of the Jets players, yeah, they of course they respected Gretzky. They knew what kind of damage he could do. But you could always, you know, give him an extra bump. You could maybe have Doug Smale shadowing him and maybe try and limit his effectiveness. But then the next line came out, and that's Messier's line. But it was Grant Fuhr was the difference, if you ask any of the Jets, because they'll say, like, Paul McLean still he was Howardchuk's winger for many years. He still is kept up at night sometimes if he thinks about it, because there were so many times when he thought he had a sure goal and Fuhr would kick out a pad or a blocker. And Fuhr was in his goal. His task was to make the last save of the game in a run and gun game. And he made that save. And Gretzky had said in to Winnipeg audiences, the difference was we had a Hall of Fame goaltender in Grant Fuhr, a nearly Hall of Fame goaltender in Andy Moog, and you guys just had very good goaltenders in goalies like Brian Hayward and Daniel Berthiaume and Pokey Radek, who ended up playing for Edmonton later on. But I think the 84-85 team, if you talk to, for example, Kirk Kielback, who was the play-by-play guy, he saw every game that season. And he thinks that was the team because they had Howerchuk, McLean, Brian Mullen, Laurie Boschman, Doug Smale, and Thomas Steen, who scored 30 goals each, a minimum of 30 goals each. And that team was fantastic. And they had grit, too. They could they could beat you on the score sheet. They could beat you in the alleys. Laurie Boschman was, he might have been a born-again Christian, but he was one of the dirtiest players out there. He would he would run over his mother if she was in the way. And a lot of Oilers and Flames have told me how much they hated coming into Winnipeg because they'd come in here, it's cold, and it's there, so they didn't want to play against guys like Boschman, and the Jets were tough, and it was a miserable experience a lot of the time. But so that 80-45 team was the team we all thought that's when it had the potential, and then and the McCowan cross check that once that happened, all bets were off.
So, Jeff, you fast forward to 2021. It's a totally different time. And the Jets, after having to face Gretzky and Coffey and Messi, and now they got to face the league's two leading scorers in McDavid and Draisaitl. Do you yep. see the run ending, or do the Oilers go 7-0 all-time against the city of Winnipeg in two different organizations?
You mean 7-1. You left out the WHA1.
Well, I'm talking in the NHL.
I don't think that's if we're talking city versus city, it's 6-1. Well, all I would say about it is certainly McDavid has seemingly had his way with the Jets for a lot of the season, similar to how Gretzky always seemed to have his 5-point nights against Winnipeg. The difference is, well, the similarity between Edmonton today and Edmonton in the 80s was you've got the scorers of Gretzky and Curry and Messier versus Draisaitl and McDavid. I don't think anybody would mistake anybody in the Oilers' net today for Grant Fuhr. So if goaltending can be the difference in the playoffs, there's a Winnipeggers feel they have a shot because Connor Hellebuyck is the defending Vezina Trophy winner. And if they can somehow tighten things up a little bit and keep Draisaitl and McDavid off kilter, and if they don't have Grant Fuhr making the last save in the last minute, then people here think there's a shot.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate it. People can get the book at McNallyRobson.com. You can check out Broken Ribs and Popcorn. You can get it anywhere online. Of course, if you want to focus on the hotline, because I will say the Jets and Glenn Sather's been on record as talking about the Jets in the WHA really led him with, with Hedberg and Hall and Nilsson and those other guys, really kind of how the Oilers played in the 1980s. They were a freewheeling team, and Sather's on record as saying that a lot of that came from watching those Jets teams. Anders Hedberg is probably one of the best hockey players that very few people talk about. He was dynamic and probably doesn't get his due as far as how good he was as a hockey player. Unfortunately, because he dominated in the WHA and he went on to the NHL and he had a good career, but never really put up the same type of numbers as he did with the Jets.
Well, you got to remember those guys. First of all, they were as trailblazing Swedes coming over here.
Yes.
They got abuse that you wouldn't see today, and they got hit all the time, but usually when their backs were turned. And so by the time they had 4 years of WHA action, they were pretty beaten up when they got to the NHL. And Sather, he wrote the foreword for my hotline book, and he said that he watched these guys skate up. He was on the bench for the Oilers, and he watched them. He was never on the ice against them. But he said he watched these guys regroup and crisscross and play like people in the NHL in those days, you went up and down your wing. And he said, when he became coach, he said, that's how we're going to play. And so when Gretzky came over to Edmonton, he said, we're going to build the Oilers using the blueprint of the WHA Jets. And that's what they did. And luckily, obviously they drafted players who would fit that mold. You couldn't make a bunch of plumbers play that way, but they got Willie Lindstrom in 83,
yeah,
who came over. He knew that blueprint, and they got Kent Nilsson in 87. And that 87 team, when you had the second line was Anderson, Messier, and Kent Nilsson. Jack, your reporter, Matheson at the Edmonton Journal, told me. Sorry, what's his first name?
Jim.
Yeah, Jim Matheson. Thank you. Jack Matheson worked at the Winnipeg Tribune. I didn't want to get confused there. Jim Matheson.
Yeah, it's his father.
Told me that. he said that line of Nilsson, Messier, and Anderson was the fastest line he had ever seen play. So that was it was very difficult to see these great players from Winnipeg who came over here, came overseas, and learned the ropes here, and then went on to Edmonton, the hated Oilers, and had fantastic success. And they played, but they got to, the thing was, we were all happy for them because they got to play the kind of hockey that let them excel, and they got to play that kind of hockey that everyone liked to watch, and they didn't have to worry about the goonery and the thuggery.
Yeah, well, Alf Nilsson was, him and Anders Hedberg, and then, of course, Kent Nilsson, and you had Bobby Hawley. One year, you had four guys with 100 points. I think that was the year they won in 78. Like, that was four forwards with 100 points, man. I don't care what league you're playing in. You kidding me? And I was in, some of those guys missed some games. I think Nilsson, Alf, that is, had missed, like, seven or eight games and still led the team with 126 points. So they were a pretty dynamic group and kind of had a little bit of a impact, for sure, on the Oilers of the 80s. Well, thanks for your time, Jeff, and enjoy the playoffs. And people, once again, can get the book. It is called Broken Ribs and Popcorn. Check it out. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys.